Life Audio.
Today on Talk About That, I have way too many pairs of glasses and a car just for my dogs. Meanwhile, John ponders if there's a right way to leave a text thread. Then singer-songwriter Caleb Christopher Edwards joins us for a candid interview about his creative and spiritual journey since being diagnosed with autism. Plus a conversation about the dangers of certainty and the thrill of hunting muskrats. Today's episode is not sponsored by mattress stores. Our favorite location is right across the street from another mattress store. But first, a word from our actual sponsor.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Time for a little Bantertown special episode. It's John and Johnny, and we're going to bring a guest on in a moment. Johnny, the excitement is palpable in the room. Let's talk about that.
People don't say palpable enough.
I agree. It's a mouthful. You got to really have your consonants ready.
You get tripped up on palpable.
Yeah. I like words.
It's always
like that.
Tension that's palpable. The excitement is palpable.
Right. There's something invisible that you can feel, which I question that.
An existential threat.
Do you
is
think
palpable?
Do
not
you
that
really
our guest
feel...
would be an existential threat. That's
right.
I'm overselling it, honestly.
Well, let's be honest.
If he thinks he could take us, there's no way.
Is the excitement even palpable? Like, do you actually feel it, or was that just my pitch? You know what I'm saying?
No, that's a hard sell.
Yeah. Like, if you were here right now, well, number one, you have to go back in time. But number two, I mean, it just feels normal.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
The tension is a normal level.
Right. So. Hey, that's our show.
I think we got what we need. So I had an experience yesterday. It started 2 days ago because I get back from my trip and I've been okay at keeping up with my driving glasses. I have two pair. I have a pair of sunglasses and I have a pair. Because, you know, I don't have the transition. Are they transition? No, progressives.
Yeah.
I didn't want progressives. I can't imagine getting used to that.
Oh, you can't imagine just the political implications of it.
Exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
The liberal drift of my glasses.
Yeah.
So I just get the far away seeing kind. I wear them when I'm driving.
Don't use your technical jargon with me. Can I get one of them far away seeing kinds? Thanks.
So I have a pair of sunglasses, and I have to keep up with these cases. So I'm just determined to
just
leave
stick
them
in your backpack. Like
determined
I
to leave them in rental cars, though. When you take them off and you get to the, so anyway, I think I left them in the rental car, and I'm like, finally, I've lost a pair. I lost the sunglasses in the ocean in Cancun because I'm like, there's hardly any waves. I'm getting in the ocean with these, and then a gigantic wave knocks them off my head, and they're buried.
Do you really think it was a gigantic wave, or was it just the weakness of your legs?
Well, it was the weakness of my glasses is holding onto my face.
That's crazy because your face seems
you seem determined
robust.
You seem determined to insult me today. I think we need to hold on. Let's
this
hold.
Is usually the other way around. I'm sorry.
That's right. You're being a little aggro today.
Hey, stay in your lane, driver. That's my job.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so I lost those and I had to buy I literally had to order more from Cancun. I was like, hey, remember when I bought those glasses 2 weeks ago? Go ahead and order some more so they'd be there when I got home. So now I have those. Now I've lost the other pair.
I literally ordered your glasses from a company called Cancun. So I had to order some more from
you've
Cancun.
Never had? Oh, you got to try them.
Cancun glasses.
So I get back from this trip and I'm like, great, now I've lost the other pair. Unbelievable. And so I go to the glasses place. Not a sponsor. America's Best. They're fine. Again, palpable.
Their excellence is palpable.
I go there. I'm looking. at different frames because I'm like, well, now that I've had these a while, I probably don't care for them. They're a little Clark Kent-y, right. You know, more than I might like. Because I see these people wearing these cool ones that have like a bridge that's kind of solid, but then the frames are almost wireless. And I'm like, maybe that would look better on my face, which is where you wear the glasses these days. So I pick out a couple of pair that are more, oh, I kind of like these. Yeah. But then it's $200-something. I got two pair. I'm like, I'm just going to go ahead and get two pair. One that's kind of a fun, hey, and then more one that's more of a, I could wear them on stage maybe.
You can't.
Which
hide,
I've not done yet.
You can't
yet.
Hide money, by the way. Just dropping glasses like they're going
I
out
get
of
back, and I'm cleaning up the house yesterday and moving things around, and I hear this, cluck, cluck, something fell on the floor. My old glasses.
Were they in the couch cushions?
They were on the table, like under a hoodie, just piled of clothes on my kitchen table.
Wow.
And so now I have
three pairs
of driving glasses that are just regular lenses. And I have one pair of sunglasses and then one pair, of course, at the bottom of the ocean in Cancun.
Wow.
So talk about can't hide money.
No kidding.
So if anybody needs some glasses and is my exact prescription, I'm happy to help.
Don't you wear glasses up close at times?
No. You know, if I wear them up close, everything's blurry and I can't deal with it. Like
so
if
you
I walk
read
around,
fine and stuff.
I read fine.
So
well,
your eye issues
in as much as I can read.
Right. With literacy notwithstanding, you read fine.
Yeah, so that's what bothers me is if I have my phone here, it's blurry now. So I won't wear them unless I'm driving, but then I forget to bring them with me sometimes.
Your phone's blurry right there now? Oh, with the glasses on.
With the glasses on.
Oh, so you're the opposite of me though.
Yeah.
Because my phone's blurry.
In a lot of ways.
Well.
Darkness has no place with light or plate. Well, anyway, speaking of can't hide money, I just want to say something because we have friends, Mary Beth and Josh Lee, who listen to the show. They're great people.
Wonderful people.
But Curry tells me last night she hung out or had a conversation with Mary Beth, and she goes, yeah, we were hanging out because they play Bunko. Do you know what Bunko is?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know what it was.
I mean, I couldn't play it.
But it's like this whole group of girls that play Bunko, and they share stories and tales of rivalry that they share across
the table.
If they
went on like a trip to play Bunko, would they sleep on Bunko beds? Is it a...
We'll edit this out.
Yeah, sorry.
So she's telling, you know, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, I thought she sees Curry's car, which Curry's had for like over a year.
Yeah.
This car. She goes, I thought you drove a purple car, which we'd have. She used to have a purple Sonata. And Curry goes, yeah, we still have that car.
Oh.
And, right, that's what Mary Beth said. She goes, oh, well. She goes, well, what do you kept it? And they go, she goes, yeah, that's what we drive the dogs around in.
Wow.
Which
that really,
and I go, did you explain though, or does Mary Beth think just we kept
just
a third
kept a car to
for
draw
our
the dog,
dogs
to the dog part
because that feels,
you probably own now,
right?
Right.
We built the dog park. That's like we bought a zoo, but it's a sequel, it's a
whole different.
We bought a dog park. Matt Damon when he's after he goes bankrupt from crypto, we leased a dog park.
Fortune favors the brave, he would say.
Yeah, but anyway. The true story about it, because I want to kind of explain to Mary Beth and to our listeners, the car is a piece of crap, and we can't sell it. So it's not like we're like, I can't believe you
couldn't
just hang on to a car.
Could you have traded it, though, whenever you got the other one?
We were going to get like $1,200 for it.
Right.
And I was like, or we could just keep it, because our dogs are back and forth to the vet, and we take them to get a cheeseburger sometimes. And that way we have a car that they can just trash and have hair in that's not our regular car.
So, number one, I'd like to say this.
Yeah.
My first car
cost
$1,300.
Okay. So, you're saying that I'm being like, hey, they're only going to give
only
me
$1,200.
John's like, entire income.
I've got that in my couch cushions right next to my eighth pair of glasses. Let me tell you something.
I'm sorry.
You, sir.
I apologize to any listener who also drives a crappy purple Sonata. But that's our throwaway car.
Yeah. I think it's fine.
You know what's funny? I let the dogs drive. I don't care. when I say it's the dog's car.
Right.
I'm like, let's see where we're going today.
Right.
I want to see what's going on in your head. No, but so I just wanted to clarify that, yes, we have a third. And you're not going to say anything because you have four cars, don't you?
Hey, well.
How many cars do you have?
Hey.
And you're going to say, they're all built in.
Yeah.
They're all 20 plus years old.
I have three cars.
Yes.
Yes. One is an old truck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One is an
old car.
One is a Maserati.
No. One is a 2010.
Yes.
One's a 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other's 2015. But it right now is on the fritz.
How many pairs of glasses do you have?
Well, you want to know how many? So the ones I'm wearing right now, you know how much they cost? A $1. These are Dollar Tree glasses.
Oh, are they really?
So I just go in and pick up, like, I don't
readers?
Mind.
Oh, because you have just had readers.
I just make them disposable, basically. Like, if that's I lose them, like, cool whatever, about, I just reach down and grab
that's
another
That's what's
one.
Cool about being farsighted, because you can pick up readers. See, I'm nearsighted, so I need the...
I have one prescription pair because I have a slight astigmatism, but I don't really notice the difference when the readers are on. I mean, so it's so slight, but they did get me into one pair.
Can I say that you had a senior moment the other day when we were getting ready to do the podcast and you could not find your glasses? And then we looked for like 5 minutes, and then I noticed that they were on your head.
Yeah. Yeah, they were on my head because I was wearing my beanie.
And I said, I'll never tell a soul.
Right. And I'm glad. Just like you handled that private matter with your friends today.
Your secret is safe with me. All right. Well, I don't know, but that's just where we are. But yeah, you can't hide money, and that's fine.
Yeah. You know what, listener, though?
We hope you can't hide your money.
We don't do this enough, but you should check out our website. We'll talk about it at the end as well.
All right. Talk about that podcast.com. It's where we have all our archived episodes if you want to listen to all our.
We have a couple new patrons, and we're very grateful to you. And
thanks. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
People are jumping on board?
Oh, man. By the ones.
Yeah, it's usually one at a time. It'd be weird if they all...
You know, we always say if this podcast just reaches one person, then we'll probably have to stop doing it, because that's not enough. But...
That's a failure.
Right. They won't let us do this anymore. No. I mean, I mean our wives.
Nobody can stop
They're
us.
They're going to be like, hey... This is it's run its
People
course.
Come to me and ask me at the end of my show sometimes if I'm on YouTube, and I always want to say like yes,
and then I always go, you can be too.
It's really hard to get on there. Sometimes I'll say that, and sometimes they'll nod like I'm serious. I'm like, no.
Do you have a phone or a computer or? Yeah,
I'm on YouTube. Everybody. Yeah,
you and you can watch us on YouTube as well. By the way, we upload these.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, mainly we do it for clips, but. But we do all this. I want you to just to know more about the show, because we're about to introduce a special guest right after this short break to hear from just a few of our sponsors.
Hello, folks. My name is Derek Greer, and I'm reaching out to fellow pastors and church leaders just like you to join me and other Christian leaders and organizations throughout the nation as we come together on June 8th and 9th for National Unity Weekend. Together, we will show the love of Jesus as we serve our communities on Saturday, June 8th, and then preach from a shared text on Sunday, June 9th. To register, go to unityweekend.com. That's unityweekend.com to join us as we unite the church and unite the nation.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Exciting days for Talk About That. We don't do a lot of interviews, but this year in the newness of Talk About That, we've been putting out bonus minisodes and other things. Well, today we wanted to bring on a special guest, and it is my good friend, and becoming Johnny's friend, because you guys got to hang out
today. We're already
like
this. Yeah, he's up here with you, and I'm down here. I'm the thumb.
Right, you're the thumb, But it's our friend Caleb Edwards. Caleb Christopher Edwards. You go like Christopher Edwards, because that's the name of your, like, official.
Yeah, that's what my mom gave me.
Yeah.
So I generally go by that.
That's like if you were an actor, because, you know, actors do that, where you have to register your name. Like Michael J. Fox was originally Michael Fox, but there was another Michael Fox, and he had to throw in the J.
That's exactly the reason why.
Is that what happened to you?
I was getting these checks in the mail for stuff I had not recorded.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was like, this is weird. And I was, and you know, I don't do a lot of studio stuff, but I was thinking, maybe I did do this.
So you cashed the first few. You're
so
like,
I cashed
look.
The first few. Yeah, exactly. And so finally I had to contact the distributor or whatever. I was like, this is not me. And there's another Caleb Edwards in St. Louis. He's a believer. Does like Christian, like CCM stuff.
Okay.
And we have a lot in common, yet to have met each other. I think he also owns CalebEdwards.com.
Wow.
So I was releasing my first album. I was like, I'm not going to deal with this. Because my website at the time was Caleb Plays Mandolin, which I thought that's lame.
I think it's fun. I see people have websites like, if your name is like Josh Grabinowitz and you're a comedian, I see people that go like joshisfunny.com.
Yeah, well, isn't that why you go by W?
100%.
Because it's awful.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I
don't think yours is that awful.
I made the mistake of spelling my Johnny Jonnie.
Oh, right.
So that's hard to spell too. So a lot, I get a lot of.
Yeah, I think in my phone there's an H.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going
to
keep it.
I need you to fix that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good to be here.
Johnny rages over the H in the name. So
I can. Well, I don't know.
I wonder if I rage over it.
Johnny.
The tension is.
I'll tell you what I was raging over. You guys are talking about your cars. I Ubered here.
Yeah, and I was so like
wait
upset
a minute.
With you.
Wait a minute. Hold on. You Ubered here?
Well, he Ubered to the restaurant this morning.
Do you not have a working automobile? Or you just don't believe in them? Or?
I'm Amish.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
We have, my wife and I have one car, and she makes more money than I do. So she takes it. It's, you know, it's her car. She drives it every day. So yeah. I was like, well.
See, man, what a devotion to the craft.
Like.
Or whatever this is.
But like.
I get one over a week.
Oh, okay.
Like Caleb so,
and you just spent it on us?
I did, yeah.
Man.
Caleb and I meet with a couple of guys every other Friday or Monday morning early, and like, I'm happy to pick you up. You're one exit down.
Sure, oh, you live close. Here. Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah, it's not far. I live in Donelson, so it's not that.
And he was just like, is that officially Donelson or is that Hermitage? Can you give the listeners your address? That's
yeah, it's 407.
Can you drop a pin for us?
Sure.
Thank you.
It is. It's.
Oh, you would know. It's on your mail. I'm just curious.
I don't know. It's Nashville.
Okay.
It's technically Nashville.
So your mailing address is Nashville.
Yeah, but I live over in this general area.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we appreciate your Ubering.
Yeah, of course.
We don't reimburse here.
That's so fine.
We don't validate. Are you a Nashville native?
No.
No.
No, I'm from Indiana originally.
Okay.
And
moved here for music?
Yeah. I lived in Kentucky for a couple years, which is you're performing in Hazard.
Yes.
Here soon, right?
Next week. This weekend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I lived in Hyden for 2 years, which okay. If you, the way that you'll probably go, you'll pass the little
From what
exit.
I've heard about Hazard, you need to be Hyden if you're going there. Isn't it really dangerous? Like Hazard's like a
murder
capital of the South or something?
Anna, my wife, her uncle got killed in Hazard.
No way.
In a knife fight.
Come on.
I know. Isn't that cool?
Harlan County, right? It's like a huge drug thing.
Hazard would be Leslie County. Or okay. Hyden is at least Hyden Leslie is. County.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. But yeah, there was a music program there.
Because I kind of thought the show Justified was loosely based on that area.
That was still airing when I lived there, and they went nuts over it. They loved it.
Really?
Oh, they loved it.
That just proves that like no press is bad press.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's so funny.
So yeah. They're like proud of.
They love Justified,
but they're like proud of their reputation. They're proud of their like.
It's yeah, like a
notoriety.
Right.
Keep driving, stranger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I could tell some stories that are probably not.
Well, I'm excited to go, and people because literally when I release the tour dates. People always comment, why don't you come here? Why don't you come here? And the Kentucky people are like, why are you going to Hazard? And I'm like, because they're paying me.
Yeah.
Like, I go where people want right. to come see my jokes. Like, if you want to bring me to Lexington, I'm happy to come. Nobody invited me to Lexington. I'm going to Hazard.
Yeah. People don't. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, they don't get it.
I mean, Hazard's a town, too. Like, they want
to
have
comedy. Oh, I'm excited
to
go. I can't wait. I can't wait. I hope I get stabbed, honestly.
Just now, listen,
for the story.
Yeah, listen. Hazard is actually... it's a decent town. It's pretty
It's
cool.
almost West Virginia, yeah. right? It's very...
Yeah, you're still a good hour or two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But in Hazard, that's where I bought my wife's wedding ring, is in Hazard. There's a little pawn shop there, or a little jewelry store that I bought. Went there. I was a librarian at the time. And I would drive to Hazard.
What did you do as a librarian? Like Dewey Decimal cards and stuff?
No, the school had purchased this huge... vinyl record collection of bluegrass and country music.
Yeah.
And so, and they wanted to digitize it all. And so I was responsible for like taking pictures of the albums and then putting it all in this archive.
That's cool.
Online. Yeah. It was tedious, but you know, I listened to a lot of music and podcasts and stuff.
Like inspirational probably.
Yeah. It was cool. And now I can see those. I'm like, oh yeah, I know that.
We should say Caleb is a music artist. Caleb plays mandolin, we know that, but I'm saying, like, one of the reasons we wanted to have him on, he's friends with John and is in John's small group at church, right? Aren't you guys in a small group together?
Yeah, we don't talk about
we
it.
We text each other, so, but I don't know how much of it is.
Right, it's super small.
Yeah, well, it's just very exclusive.
We're like silos.
We're in a text thread together.
Yeah.
That's just as good.
And sometimes I listen to him preach.
I think, didn't they say that about Jesus, that he had, like, the multitudes, and then he had the 70, and then he had the 12. Like, the 12 would be Jesus' text thread.
Yeah, it's like his favorites.
It would be. And honestly, that's way too many people for a text thread. If it surpasses 4, I leave.
Yeah. I'm always afraid to leave because I don't want it to look passive aggressive that I left.
I don't care.
Really?
Mm-mm. Don't care.
Have you ever been unable to leave? Like, some phones, like if one phone is an Android, you can't leave, I think.
I want to know how to remove somebody where they don't leave, but I want to get them out. Because responding anymore. No, I just want them.
A digital shun?
Them to stop being bothered by it without creating a whole new thread and losing all the history of it.
No, that's a good point.
I always feel like, because I have a thread with my small group too, and some of them listen to the show, so they'll kind of feel this. This is me being very vulnerable. But I have a feeling that they also have a thread that I'm not in.
Oh.
Because they're closer to in age than I, because I'm old. Right. Perry and I are older. So I think, like, we're in the small group. It's like, hey, guys, bring chips tonight. But then I think in their thread, they're like, can you leave this guy?
Yeah, he's probably going to bring chips.
That's me, like, centering myself a little bit more than I need to be.
Let's, Johnny, I have them waiting behind the door. Let's bring them on and ask.
They're in the thread talking about this now. Did you listen to the newest episode? Because
I'll say that in our group, there's 4 guys, and 3 of us are roughly about the same age, and John is older than us, and we do not have a separate thread.
Oh, that's nice.
I appreciate that.
Look at that.
We don't.
See, he could just come out with it. I don't have to wonder.
Well, and I'll tell you,
they're too exhausted from being in the thread with you to, like, we can't start another.
There's no more time.
I would roll my eyes if there was another thread that started. I would just, like, nah, I'm not doing this.
Right.
My close friends know that, like, if you put me in a thread and it's for an event, mm-hmm. or something,
yeah.
like, hey, we're prepping for this, I will wait until that event is over and I leave it.
Right. And it doesn't have further purpose.
Right. And I immediately silence it because I can't stand my phone going off.
Oh, you don't
like...
Okay.
I always have my note, and it drives my wife crazy because she's I need to talk to you about something.
Oh, right. Like, I can understand not wanting to talk on the phone. Like, your generation especially, like, it's all like, mm-hmm. why didn't you text me?
Right.
But you literally don't like the phone. You're one of those people that wishes you were born in another generation that's obsessed with technology?
Mm. I remember being a child and just, like, hearing my grandparents talk about how they grew up and just, like, lamenting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
some of that's like, we do that with every generation where it's like the good old days is always the good old days.
Yeah, but it didn't feel that long ago.
Yeah. And it's really not.
It isn't. In the
even the 90s is like, hardly anybody had a cell phone in the early 90s.
Well, I think too, is like I was, you know, grew up right around the corner from my grandparents. So they practically raised me as well as my parents did. And my parents are young. My grandparents are young. I'm the oldest grandson. I'm the oldest child in my family. And so my grandparents just raised me like they raised my mom.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of kind of old-fashioned things. Like, I grew up on a farm, and my grandpa taught me how to trap. And, like, I had a trap line when I was, like, 11 years old. And he was like, I had to do this in the 70s to buy your mom's diapers.
Wow. What did you trap?
A lot of muskrat, mainly. But, see, I would lament the fact that I couldn't make any money off of it. Because it was, like, you know, 2007, and the fur industry.
The muskrat.
And now I kind of feel a little bit differently about all that now.
As far as, like, treatment of animals and stuff?
Yeah, because it was... We did do it in the most humane...
You lefty Lucy.
I know, right?
If we want to trap and torture animals for their fur, I think we should be... That's freedom.
It is. Liberty.
No, once you see some of those videos of, like, the treatment... Like, it's one thing to say, like, oh, we're going to use the animal that we... But, yeah, some of that stuff is brutal.
Yeah, it is pretty brutal. And I will say that...
And you were a part of it.
I was
so
a part of it.
Let's get into it.
Single-handedly wrecked a whole species.
And now his song, Muskrat Sally.
When is the last... let's go ahead and get into that. When is the last time you've seen a muskrat? Honestly, like, I think you...
I haven't... When's the last time you saw Caleb in the same room with a muskrat rat?
That's more.
Maybe.
Yeah. Is that where musk comes from? Like, is musk, do they create musk? What's going on there?
Yeah. See, back a long time ago, I guess probably in the, you know, Daniel Boone days and stuff, beaver as well had like special glands and stuff that they went nuts over. They'd make beaver pelt hats and the glands were like cologne. Perfume.
Interesting.
Right. Like,
it's like the opposite of a skunk.
Like Jovan Musk.
Well, I don't know that it smelled great.
It just smells like manly.
If it's good enough for Daniel Boone.
Remember that thing of like, there used to be a bit about that in the 80s, like, because Brute had Brute Cologne had the ad campaign. It was like, it smells like a man. Brute, it smells like a man. Mm. And Elaine Boozler had a bit about that. She was like, yeah, they don't even tell you which man. It could be Slappy, the bait shop guy. Tell me which man, then we'll talk. You know. But yeah, Musk, yeah, I don't know. There used to be like some kind of candy. Curry was talking about her dad would go to Haiti and he would go to these mission trips and he'd bring back these weird foreign candies.
Yeah.
You ever go to like the Chinese restaurants and Japanese restaurants? They have sometimes in a dish, you'd be like, ooh, a candy. And you go,
yeah.
Like it's weird tasting. Right.
They have a different palate yeah. that they're going for.
He would bring back these lozenges and they were musk flavored and he would eat them. Can you imagine a musk candy?
What in the world
are you doing?
Yeah. Listen, I can't do, like, if we're in Mexico or even the Southwest, doing like those chili candies.
Uh-huh.
There's just something about that that's
Yeah, candy's supposed to be sweet.
It's supposed to be good.
Yes.
And this
it's a treat.
But that's
it's not a challenge.
Guys, that's a North American way of seeing candy.
Are you saying that we're being...
I'm saying you're culturally appropriated to the candy taste that you know, which is fine.
Listen, I want chemicals and hormones in my candy.
Are you saying that we're being like American exceptionalism about candy?
I'm saying if candy tastes good to people in
I don't even like
Central
all American
South
candy.
America.
I don't like dark chocolate. I think dark chocolate is for people that like chocolate and also don't like themselves. Like, it feels like if I punish myself a little bit and it's a little bitter.
See, you're not getting the right. I love dark. I think I would prefer dark chocolate.
But I think, here's the thing. I don't mind people that like dark chocolate. I mind people that think that I have a... unrefined palate for not liking dark chocolate.
So this is really
are you
about
looking down on me?
Well, yes, but not for just that.
So here's something I just read recently because I like dark chocolate. I like it bitter.
Okay,
I drink my coffee black, and I like dark beer, and so it's just
interesting.
My palate is
just you're totally all gnarled up.
Yeah, I enjoy hating myself. But I just read something that's like people who enjoy dark chocolate, dark coffee, black beer, and stuff like that. Bitter foods, like they're more prone to some sort of mental illness.
Oh,
and so my
wife. I wonder if it's causation, not correlation, not causation, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Like you're also
like
bitter,
medicating.
You're also
like,
bitter in your soul.
Totally. Well, yeah.
So you happen to like those things, or if it's like, no, dark chocolate causes schizophrenia.
Yeah. Well,
let's go ahead and get into that.
My wife who enjoys like Zowers and jelly beans and stuff like that.
Kid stuff.
Exactly. She's a child. And she's not a child.
She's coming in. Come on in.
Yeah, come on in. Yeah.
Anna right here.
Sit down.
She's furious.
I read this to her. She was, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And I said, well, yeah.
Okay. You agreed a little too quickly.
She did. Yeah.
Yeah. There's been studies released about people who have comedic minds that it's like one step away from like a mental illness. Like the way that you see the world is also very similar to the way a crazy person sees the world.
I mean, yeah. Right?
I don't know.
It's funny that you mentioned that. So we have a mutual friend. His name's Paul Harris.
Yes, Paul's the best.
Paul is the best. I play in Paul's band every now and then in the Cleverleys, and it's a lot of fun. You'll appreciate this. I just remember this. We did a private event here around Christmas, this past Christmas. And it was in this big hotel up in Indiana somewhere. And we're doing our sound check and we're putting our gear on the stage and stuff. And the promoter comes by and he's a nice guy. And he introduces himself and he's like, yeah, last time we had this event, we had Brett Michaels from Poison here.
Okay.
And so this is what I said. I said, oh, that's a sneaky way to name drop somebody.
Yeah.
And Paul, who is a comedian, I should say, just doubles over in laughter.
Right.
And that struck me as odd because the promoter did not laugh.
Mm. Yeah.
And I didn't think it was that funny. I was just like, poking fun a little bit at this guy. I didn't even know his name. But he's over laughing for what I thought it was. So then afterwards we do our sound check. We go to dinner. And the promoter comes in again, and he's just chatting as we're eating. And so he names drops again.
Yeah.
And it's like Sting or somebody. And so he catches himself, and he looks at me, and he goes, I guess I do that a lot, don't I? And I said, yeah, it seems like a big part of your personality. And Paul starts laughing, just like pounding the table laughing.
Oh, man.
Which, you know, that's a funny quip, I guess.
Yeah.
But still, like, he can't breathe. The guy leaves, and Paul immediately looks at me straight faced. He goes, "You need to start smiling or laughing when you tell a joke, because that guy thinks you're serious."
Yeah, yeah.
And you're kind of being a jerk.
Right.
And I was like, "Oh, dang." And that's when I remembered. I'm like, I am autistic. I forgot about that. And my wife has to tell me that often. She's like, "Yeah, what you think is funny is not."
No, no, that's funny.
Yeah.
To me too. Like, I think you're right though. Like, sending those social cues and signals to people that, like, we're all kidding here, right? Mm. But sometimes it's so fun to not do it, to see if you can get away with it. Right. But you're not doing it on purpose. You're just like,
because I don't pick up on that stuff very often. And I don't know. I don't really pick up on the fact that someone might be squirming.
Yeah.
And I get that in the movies that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy The Office because it's very squirmy, mm-hmm. you know, and my wife hates it. She hates it.
Right. I know people like that can't watch The Office because Michael's so cringy.
Right. Because she's an, if you're Enneagram, I know you are, John, because you wrote a book and stuff, but Enneagram people,
mm-hmm.
my wife is a two, and so she can't stand to have anybody remotely upset.
It's like an empath thing, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
So you're feeling pain on behalf of other people.
Yes.
Proxy pain.
Right.
Depends on, again, if my wife was here, she'd be like, well, it depends on your subtype of your two. Do you remember what your subtype was?
Because your wife likes The Office.
She, yeah, because some, my wife does like The Office, yeah. She is a social two.
Yeah.
So she, and she doesn't like a lot of the funny things that I like, though.
Mm-hmm. But could she get through Scott's Tots? That's the one. That's the test of any.
Scott's Tots will, it makes
Scott's
me.
Scott's Tots, even the most devout Office fan.
It's rough.
It's hard.
It is rough. But I, but see,
I just have to tell my show, it's a show.
Yeah.
But I'm still like, the writers, how bold to just ruin
man.
All these kids' lives
yeah.
and just laugh about it. It's
but
like,
the thing that goes through my head is not, this is what I, like, how I've noticed Anna and myself, how we interpret things differently, is that when I watch the episode, I'm not thinking of the embarrassment. I'm thinking of the financial implications.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Because like, he promised them college, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's going to suck.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking about, and she's thinking about, he's so embarrassed. He's got to get this.
That's kind of where I go to.
Yeah.
I think about.
Maybe that's more of a guy thing.
I don't know.
Thinking of it like logistically.
Well, you're a five and I'm a six.
Pragmatically.
Right. So we share wings and stuff, and I think Johnny's a six.
I think, yeah.
We've shared wings before.
Oh,
sure.
you're a six? You're a six
He
as
thinks
well?
I'm a six. I've never done the thing.
Sure.
I refuse. I'm a skeptic.
Sure.
I like making fun of it.
That's well.
But I also kind of believe in it.
He's sort of totally. Afraid, I think, if he comes on board, he'll lose his edge with it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we've talked about it before.
Which is probably, what, a four?
Well, the way he really hates when we do that.
That's exactly what I'm forward to.
I'm not going to do that to you, buddy.
I think, Johnny,
I'm a seven wing two. I have big wings. I reach way across the aisle. No, I think John's read me some of the things about...
Sure.
Like, I was talking with another comedian this last weekend about the Enneagram and how, because we were talking about deconstruction a little bit and of just systems, not just about religious deconstruction, but deconstruction of like conservatism or deconstruction of whatever. And we were talking about that. And I said, well, my buddy John says I'm a loyalist, and I'm loyal. I will fight for my friends. But if I feel like a system is broken, I have to either fix it or abandon it. I can't, even though I've been loyal to it,
right.
I feel so betrayed by that broken system that if it's like, if this can't be fixed, I'm going the other way.
That's actually a classic six thing, too.
Yeah.
I'm the same way in that respect.
Yeah.
A system that has a fatal flaw that we don't work to fix, like, as long as we're working to fix it, and if it's not hurting someone, but there are certain systems I can stay in. If we're all on board to see the problem and all on board, because there's no system that doesn't have major flaws.
Sure.
Yeah.
But if we're going to do this together, we have to at least be acknowledging. If we don't acknowledge, if we make sacred the system as if we're ignoring the flaws, that's when I'm like, nope. And I'll look like an eight, which is like the challenger. Like, I will rise up and protest. I suddenly look like an activist because this is not okay. There's a humility required.
Yeah.
Or I don't want to be a part. You know?
I relate to that. The system part, and I have related to a lot of the conversations that you and I've had, but I usually always do leave thinking like John and I are very similar. He's a little bit more sad than I am.
That's See how probably, he laughed at the end?
That's probably true.
See how he laughed at the end, though? He's learning.
He was that laugh?
He knew that if he didn't laugh, it's like, this is going to hurt John's feelings.
Was that laugh I for know. Me or for you? Was that, that's the real question.
I knew that if I didn't laugh, there's going to be a separate text thread that started without me in it.
You know what? It's interesting, and I know you're joking, but also probably telling a little bit of the truth.
No, I think, there's something there.
There's a sadness, like, there's something, our mutual friend, you've met Jeff McCord, or I've introduced you to Jeff McCord.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jeff and Beth, who we're with, and then we have a friend who's, you know, does therapy and other things, and when I do sit and share, in the last couple years, it's been very, like, telling and makes me feel seen in a way that I think I had not before, because they're really listening deeper. And like Jeff has said to me several times, he'll go, man, what I really feel from you is that you're sad about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've had some relationships I've lost. I've had some work situations. And I think in the Christian world, we don't know what to do with sadness, especially coming out of evangelicalism. Like,
yeah,
because we're supposed to paint on a happy face, and that's right. How you show that you're.
Well, I wanted to follow that up with, it is refreshing.
Oh, thank you.
It is, because it's authentic. Like, you can't fake sadness,
right?
Yeah,
and why would you? And it is.
Yeah, I think there's a grieving that happens when some of the systems that you were raised in fail in front of you,
mm-hmm.
and. Yeah, you have to reconcile, like, okay, I want to stay in. I want to be a reformer.
Yeah. I think that, yeah.
But it's a sad trudge sometimes to be a reformer, especially because you're going to be accused of being like an abandoner,
mm-hmm.
or like a heretic.
Right. But I think the fact that you're still in it and you're claiming to be a reformer means that you're not abandoning it.
I guess. I try to be somebody that's not throwing rocks from the outside.
Yeah.
You know, I was raised on, I'm way older than you. When I was raised on the early days of CCM, but the guy who I really loved was a guy named Steve Taylor.
Yeah.
Who was a guy who wrote a lot of satirical stuff about the church.
Yeah.
And John Acuff called it, the way he puts it is, satirizing the church without punching Jesus in the face.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fine line. It's a very, it's a delicate dance.
It is.
And Steve Taylor really mastered that, mm-hmm. and said a lot of pointed things about Christendom. And that was really my template. It's one of the reasons I wanted to get into Christian entertainment, honestly. I knew that I wanted to be a person of faith, but I knew I wanted to do something different.
I've written a lot of music, and I've had one song from that collection of music get released, and it was Pardon My French. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it in like June of 2020.
Yeah.
And it was me trying to cope with what was happening around the world at the time. And I've realized that whether it's satire or a true rebuking, I heard someone recently explain, using the analogy that the Bible is a sword,
mm-hmm.
and that people use the sword as to cut other people, to cut down other people, when in fact it cuts both the wielder and the one standing opposed to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I've realized that when I've written these songs, it is for as much as it is rebuking a system, whether it be our country or the, you know, state of religion or whatever, I often find that it cuts me as well, mm-hmm. because, you know, I am a system within that system, and I have to figure out how do I work, and it is broken, the system we're in and the system who we are. And so the sword I wield, whether it be the song or the word of God, usually, like, in my trying to rebuke something, I usually cut myself off.
Well,
and
what's crazy is that's actually what the scripture says it does.
Exactly.
The word of God is living and active and sharper than a double-edged sword, piercing to the division of soul and spirit, at joint and marrow. It discerns the thoughts and intents of the heart.
Yeah.
And so when people use and they sort of hijack that language of the sword.
Yeah, like they're just Braveheart running through the field, whacking people's heads off.
Yeah, yep. The whole point of the sword is to discern, is to divide you.
Yeah.
So that you can see the parts of you that are apart from God's ways that he wants to invite you. But so it's like that I, you know, I have a couple things in life. I may have said this to both of y'all at some point, but like, I told someone about leadership the other day. the one thing in leadership I will not tolerate, I think, anymore, if you're leading a system or organization or anything, is if I won't tolerate certainty.
Mm. Gosh, yes.
I won't tolerate certainty. Like, hey, I don't mind you being confident. I don't mind you having a certain plan. Mm-hmm. I think having a being certain about your plan, yeah, that's fine. If you're certain about your outcome and all the people and their and who's involved and how this should go, and come, I mean, I'm not talking about certainty of, hey, I trust in the grace of Jesus as my certainty, those things. I mean, like, no, man, everyone who thinks this way that's a little different than mine, I am certain they are completely wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I'm like, mm.
Like tribalism.
Because I've been a leader long enough, even on a smaller scale. Like, we had a situation, I think, again, I can't remember who I told this. It was like, there's a situation that went down that it didn't matter. Okay, I want to make something, I'm going to say something controversial.
Oh, wow, okay.
Like,
finally.
Regardless of how you feel about the current president and the president before,
mm-hmm,
okay, this is again, a great example. I said this to someone last night, and I don't really want to defend either one, mm-hmm, of those presidents.
Right. No desire.
But I've been in a leadership, small, tiny leadership chair long enough to know this is a global crisis. I'm speaking of COVID that hit.
Sure.
A global crisis, which was not, I think Americans often forget to, yeah, go, well, this is someone's fault. They want to blame an American. Yeah. It's a very Americanized and American-centric sort of way of seeing the world. And it's like, well, yeah, but when it hit China or South America, like, how could that possibly be our president's fault or not?
Now, yeah,
I disagree with a lot of responses on all kinds of things, but the bottom line was that was going to be such a cluster. Whoever was in that chair,
yeah,
it was going to be a mess.
Oh, right.
No matter what came, you weren't going to get a great outcome. I've had things happen at our church that the situation was so messed up, I did my very best to respond. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a mess regardless. Mm-hmm. I'm really just trying to mitigate the disaster. And if we hold leaders responsible, I'm going to end up looking bad on some front. There's no way around it. So I don't tolerate certainty, and I don't tolerate someone who acts like they're not broken.
Yeah.
And they may have different language for it.
Yeah.
But like, if they can't, if you act like, I don't know why I would need that, everything's great, I'm just like, my skepticism of that, mm-hmm, is like, well, even, especially if you really believe that,
mm-hmm,
like, I'm just like, oh man. Like,
yeah. If I meet somebody and they have the attitude of like, if everybody in the world was just more like me, we would be great. That's a person to stay away from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's how we're kind of taught though.
Yeah.
Like
we're taught to like homogenize people, and you find the five people that are most like you, and those are that's your friend group.
Yeah.
So there's never any like change that can really happen because you're just kind of,
you militarize that, and I'm using that in a very literal and figurative way.
Yeah.
Like when you become militant in that mindset, which is, I think, what we're doing. Then,
right. Isolationism and stuff.
Yeah. When your isolated viewpoint becomes what you think should be the global viewpoint.
Yeah.
And again, I'm really not talking about the basics of faith, because I think if we apply the basics of faith, we would actually find ourselves living a lot differently towards the world, even though we believe strongly we believe. It will lead you to kindness, forgiveness, yeah, resolution. It will lead you to not tolerance in the sense of, I am agreeing that your viewpoint is one that is equally valid to mine. That's not what tolerance is. Tolerance says, I disagree with you, yet I maintain civility, kindness towards you,
right,
empathy, those kinds of things. But I think... Yeah, the moment we bring those things into this must be the only way, it's not only it becomes dangerous physically, but
right,
it's very dangerous to, I think, the sort of fabric of how we all get along with one another.
I think there's the tolerance thing. It's more of a, I hear things Christians might say that I would disagree with, and where I grew up in a tradition where it's like, no, I disagree with that. Mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking now, I'm falling on the sword once again, where I'm thinking like, well, I know that the faith tradition I live in would disagree with this most of the time. But why do I disagree with it?
Yeah.
And is it the person, or is it the,
yeah,
what they're saying that I disagree with? And if I'm faced with the same issue that we're discussing, what's my answer to it? Mm-hmm. And I realize, like, you know, the answer that I have is usually not a good one. You know, if whether it's accepting someone or
it's not fully formed yet. Sometimes.
It's not fully formed. Yeah. And I realized, like, oh gosh, like, I don't know. There is no certainty.
Yeah.
Once again, it's like, I don't really know. I know that how I would treat them as, yeah, a person, if they, you know, were different in a tradition that looked different than mine, you know, I would treat them as a person, and then I just have so much of that feedback loop in my head that's so much like, well, you have to treat them this way, or you have to they have to be in this specific pew of your church because they are this and not this. And it's very much, yet again, us versus them situation. And I kind of have this battle in my mind constantly. It was like, well, neither of these feels right. Mm-hmm. So I usually just kind of leave with a question mark in my brain most of the time.
Yeah, you opened up and you talked a little bit about being on the spectrum. Like, can you talk about that journey? Because I know some of your music that's kind of coming out and has been out is like a journey through that, telling that story a little bit, right?
Right. Yeah. So I released my first album in 2020. It was a great year for record sales. And
his timing was
good. Year for book sales, though, right, John? Hang on now. Hold on. Go ahead.
And that was called Metamorphosis. And okay. This music that I had started writing when I was 18, and it was really from 18 to 22, 23. And it was a sort of this big idea, like concept record of documenting these songs that I'd written in real time. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was me leaving Indiana, going to college in Kentucky, starting a music career, getting married. My wife has a chronic kidney disease, and like we suffered a miscarriage during that. And I was 22 at the time. So that's a lot, you know, for someone that young to go through. And it, you know, it didn't do well at all, just because I had no idea what I was doing. But the record, I think, is good. And
it's really, really good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
But I liked the idea of keeping up with that, this tradition of sort of taking taking the idea of growth and implementing it towards a concept album. So I always wanted to kind of like move forward. And so I had this idea of making another album yet again, using even some of the same melodic themes that are used in Metamorphosis and hinting at them at times, but using the same basically the same plot of using songs that I wrote in real time. And that was basically from, it's a much shorter gap, so like in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And it was, I started working with Paul in May of 2021. And it's hilarious because if anybody knows, you can look up the Clever Lease. Like, it's a riot.
Oh, they're fantastic.
It is a riot.
Yeah.
And I had heard of them for years. And when they called me to come play, I laughed and said, well, I'll do this because it'll be a good story. Mm-hmm. And here I am. Like, I leave next week to go on tour with them again. And they're just really good guys and good musicians on top of it. And it's just funny stuff. But, It's funny now looking back on it that I was with Paul most of 2021 and me realizing that something's wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. And the things that I've been able to like hide from really everybody, there was either this, I can't hide it anymore, or I don't want to. Mm-hmm. And I realized like, oh, I've spent the last 2 years in my home doing nothing but just living, and like my wife and I came out of COVID thinking like, you know, if I don't play another gig again, I think I'm okay. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Like there was like very much this Zen place to be where I was, I felt like a monk. I really did. I was like, I could probably be a monk.
Yeah.
And I came out of that.
A married monk. Yeah.
It's probably the best.
Those are advantages. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were in such a great place, my wife and I, and I think it was just, I was able to just be myself without ever having to worry about what someone thought. Mm-hmm. Because we had a very, very, very close circle of friends that I felt that with, and we were in between churches at the time too. And so it was kind of a paradise. And then I had to start working again. And I was like, okay, great. I'll go on tour and it'll be the same old, same old. Well, I was like having panic attacks on the wings of stages and in bus bunks and stuff.
Yeah.
And I realized something's wrong. And I've always had sensory things, and but those seemed heightened to like 1,000, and I couldn't figure out why. And so through a couple of grants, actually, with Music Cares being one of them, I started getting help and started talking to someone professionally throughout all this. And a year ago in February, they gave me the autism diagnosis.
Interesting.
And it was a hunch already.
Yeah. And you knew you kind of were wired differently.
I knew there was something.
You perceived the world differently.
Yeah, but I've really thought a lot about this. Like, I've wrestled with that word, with that label, too. Yeah. And I have a sister who's adopted who is autistic, and she's nonverbal. And so when I think of someone with autism, I think of my sister, Sophie. And, you know, I have a job, and it's very different, and it is very much a spectrum. And so I can really get an imposter syndrome about my diagnosis.
Yeah.
And, so during all that, I wrote a bunch of songs about it. And so I called the album, I wanted to keep the meta theme since the first one was Metamorphosis. I called this one Metanoia, which is, do you know what it means, Pastor?
It means repentance or the turning of one's mind.
Exactly. Changing one's mind or conversion. Mm-hmm. And so I also during that time went through like a spiritual deconstruction and reconstruction as well. I think it's very important to also add the reconstruction part.
Right.
And so looking at my faith differently on top of having the awareness of my mind is different really completely changed my life.
Yeah.
For the better, I should say. And we have a Kickstarter launched currently, and it's to fund this ginormous idea of an album. And
I love the idea of it. You don't see a lot of theme records anymore. Everything's just single, and throwaways.
It is a toss up. It's, you know,
I like it.
I do too. I love all my favorite records are concept records, and I just love the idea of writing, having a theme to write for.
Yeah.
And if I have a theme, like I can write 20 songs. I can give you 2 records, you know, and I could have easily done this if given more time. But I realized really quickly, because I'd sing some of these songs out and I'd have people come up to me and they're like, hey, this means a lot to me. Like my son or my daughter or myself, my brother, whatever, were diagnosed with autism when we were kids or just found out. And
so you talk about it in the shows.
I've started to.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
You know,
it's very vulnerable.
It is very vulnerable.
Like you say, you're dealing with stigma, but now the stigma's kind of diminishing.
It is diminishing. It's almost cool now. Which
means you're like a superhero. You're a mutant.
Exactly. Yeah. So it is changing. There is, I don't know. I've still dealt with people who thought they were being really inclusive and they weren't.
Yeah.
And so I would ask for space or just accommodation, very small, you know. And you know, when you actually like you let them know, like, hey, I do have this, like, it's fine. I just process things a little differently.
Yeah.
But some, like, these are the things that I can't handle very well. Like one being a lot of, like big groups and stuff that really freaks me out and noises and stuff. I don't like that. And, or being physical. I don't really like that either.
Have you always been that way?
Yeah, I have.
You just didn't know what it was.
I just didn't know what it was. And I'm a pastor's kid.
Yeah.
So it was very much
always huggy people.
Always huggy.
And potluck dinners and...
Big
crowds and... Yeah. How do you deal with concerts then?
I wear earplugs a lot.
And you put them as like one person. The throng of people.
It's tricky. I'm trying to come to terms with music because I love it and it's important and it's my job.
And it's a conversation with that group, so you have to have them.
It's a conversation. Yeah, I need them. performing is not a problem.
Yeah.
Because I can hide behind the music sometimes. And it's getting to the point now where I don't, just don't care. And if I'm nervous, I just like, hey, I'm nervous. And people are like, people like that. Like, yeah, I just played, I just played this really small thing just a couple nights ago. And I was there to support some friends of mine. And during the intermission, the host, it was a writer's round, the host came up and he's like, do you want to sing a song? And I wanted to say no with everything, and but I knew that I should. And so I did it. And I was just shaking like this because I was just scared. And so I finally just went up there, tuned the guitar. I was like, I'm scared. And after that, all the other singers were like, yeah, I'm kind of scared too, but this is like a great group of people to be scared with. And it's
yeah.
I just realized that I have nothing to hide, and I've got, I realize that there are pros and cons to being vulnerable, but I just, I'm kind of tired. I'm just tired of hiding things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what John and I discovered with the podcast. Cause once you've done 100 plus episodes, like we have, we've done over 200. It's like, we literally just, if you, we don't have any pretense anymore.
Yeah.
And, so I thought about that word vulnerability. Cause I was talking to my wife about it. I was like, I think of it as like this compliment of like, this person's so vulnerable, but what it means is like, I'm open to attack.
Yeah.
I'm opening myself to attack. That's what vulnerable literally means in like a battle sense.
Yeah. Vulnerability to a larger population.
Like, here's my underbelly. Here's my underbelly. Right. Go ahead and have at it. Exactly. And you're like, man, it's very scary, but I think I got,
we always say, hey guys, when you're vulnerable, doesn't mean that everyone needs to know everything. It means that someone needs to know everything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think I got more scared of not being vulnerable because I saw myself being closed off and becoming a closed off person. Like, I'm so protected, or like a very curated image of yourself, which is what happens in entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Johnny's the cool comedian guy. Well, no, he's also this scared person.
Yeah.
Right.
So you got to give him that too.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. It's funny you were talking about systems, because I think how one deals with broken systems is usually probably wrapped up in your fight or flight.
Yeah.
And like, you want to fight it. But I think both of you admitted to wanting to fight it. If it gets so broken, I'll just run.
Yeah.
And because that is my response to panic or anxiety or overstimulation, is like, I just need to get out of here.
Yeah. I think John's friendship makes me want to stay and fight. But if I was by myself, I would have ran.
Yeah. So the vulnerability,
we drew
part
a lot of
that,
strength from each other probably during that.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, once I've found this church and John, and Andrew, and we have a really great community now, that and a lot of them outside the church are in the arts and even in the same like genre that I am, so I can see them on the road. That was one thing. I was on tour with the Cleverleys. We were in Austin, Texas, and I was having a really bad time, and a buddy of mine, his name's Lincoln Mick, he plays with a wonderful band called the Arcadian Wild, and he was also, we were playing the same festival, just different days, so we were in Austin at the same time. And he just called me. He goes, I've got like half an hour. Do you want to hang out? I was like, please, excuse me. And so I saw him, and I just like, remember just like hanging on his shoulders. Cause I was just like, I can't do this.
Right.
And he just like hugged me tight and just prayed for me like right there. Huh. And I realized, like, because that was the big thing when I was finally diagnosed, the doctor was like, you know, you are, for lack of a better term, high functioning, which they don't use that anymore.
Right.
And she said, if it was 10 years ago, we'd call this Asperger's, which they don't use that anymore either.
Right.
And she'd say, the biggest thing that you need, the most important thing you need is accommodation when you need it, and a group and a community of people who are just not judgmental about it at all and will just not ask any questions if you need something.
Yeah, like safety.
Exactly. And so I sat there and I thought, that's not going to be a problem. Like, I have that.
That's good. And
it was the first time I really had
That's
it.
That's what the church should be.
It's the first the, time the I ever really had church. It in a church.
Yeah.
In a church and in a music community too. And so it's just now, it's like, if I just disappear, everyone's like, oh, this is Caleb. You know, it's fine. Or if I say a joke and don't laugh, they're like, oh, he's kidding.
That's just, by the way, he killed a lot of muskrats. He's got a dark history that leads us to this part. I heard the best thing. I got to go so soon. I want to hear a song from Caleb, though, right?
We're going to end the show.
But I will say this about vulnerability and like that place of safety. this great thing I saw on Instagram yesterday. It was a, I think it was a therapist, and he was saying somebody in his DM said this to him, and he had to say it back to his followers. He said, somebody said that men who are single think when they're trying to find a mate that they're competing with the top 10% of other men for a woman's affection.
Yeah.
But what they're really competing with, this was a woman who said this to the guy, what they're actually competing with is the peace a woman feels in solitude.
Wow.
So in other words, what you think you're competing with, these, they makes more money, he blah, blah, blah. But what a woman feels when she's at peace by herself, that's what she's really looking for in a mate. And you're competing with that.
Right.
I was like, that's really interesting and heavy. Like,
interesting. Wow.
And I'm sure there are, you also want the guy to make money and be able to provide. But like, the like when I think about the best moments of me and my wife, it's, I feel I'm having as much fun with her as I would have if she, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a, there's an ease to our relationship that I don't get anywhere else. And that's why we're still together after 27 years. There's an ease to our relationship and a safety.
That's good to know, because I give my wife a lot of solitude and no money.
See?
I was going to say,
that's what she really wants.
Babe, you hit the jackpot.
You gave her exactly what she wants, by according to this Instagram video. So,
well, Caleb's going to grab a guitar here. He's on guitar today instead of mandolin, but I will say this, Caleb, you are the best mandolin player.
Don't introduce a guy that way.
I've ever seen.
That's the worst
intro.
He's not
playing a mandolin.
Okay,
playing
all right.
Yeah, I'm a bad guitar player.
So what song are you going to play for us today?
I think, since I am playing the guitar, when I started sort of writing this collection of songs that we're calling Metanoia, I started with my 27th birthday. I've always hated my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Despised it. Like, and my birthday is in February. And so, like, having the diagnosis around my 28th birthday was, I think, divine, honestly.
Yeah.
And, but I kind of started this when I was 27. And I was just trying to, I just had so much pent up. I was like, I got to figure out why I feel this way. And so I was just trying to, exploring that. And it'll be the first song of the record, but it's called 27.
Years have flown right by. I hope I get a few more before I die. All this time and no alibi for this fear of being loved. I'm older than my dad was when he was my age. I'm younger than the gray that's showing up on my face. The yearn for going home is so near, so far, so long. Hands curse my name when I play a song. It makes it kinda hard to play the whole night long. It's what I gotta do just to right all the wrongs and this fear of being loved. Being born in the winter suits me just right. The bittersweet cold and the silence at night. And 27 years is just an intro to this song. So far, so long. Ideal world, I'd know when I'd die. I'd kiss all my babies, I'd say my goodbyes. I'd trek through the snow, just the forest and night. This fear of being loved. I think I'd rather die alone than look me in the face and tell me I was loved by all the folks in this place. Some folks can't handle all the love you feel so strong. So far, so long. Seven years, I think, is plenty of time to get over all the demons named myself and I. Beginning to think I should swallow my pride in this fear of being loved. Cause maybe I'm a fool and a blind one at that for thinking that a hug is any less than that. Maybe I can learn to love all this love so far, so long.
Oh, it's amazing.
Beautiful.
Amazing. It's great. I love it. Love that song.
Thank you.
And so, again, a lot of new songs coming out. Tell us about this Kickstarter. Tell us where they can go and be a part of this.
Yeah, so you can go to my website, which is CalebChristopherEdwards.com /Kickstarter, and there's some info there, and that'll take you to the Kickstarter page, because the URL for the Kickstarter page is super long, so I don't remember what it is. But if
and
you
we'll
do,
link to it in the show notes,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you can go visit my website, but it is a daunting figure that we have to raise, and but I'm just trusting in Jesus, and because this story is much bigger than myself.
We lend you the full weight of our online platform.
Yes,
appreciate
it. It's considerable.
Yes. Yeah. We would love every listener out there. Hey, guys, go check out CalebChristopherEdwards.com.
Yeah, let's get these tunes in the air, guys.
Yeah, click the link and go be a part of this Kickstarter. Kick in some shekels. In fact, Johnny, this week, instead of going and becoming a patron of the podcast,
why don't
we'd rather
you
go.
Go be a patron of Caleb there.
Yeah, well, it's huge.
I really appreciate you guys, and thanks for having me.
Of course.
Yeah. It was quite fun. Yeah,
yeah, we had a blast.
Yeah, it was a blast. Make sure you check out our website at talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
That's right.
And you can get all the archived episodes. Go to Johnny W, JONNIEW.com.
No H.
You can follow him. There's no H.
No H.
It's 9E, and he's really weird, but you should do it anyway. Mm-hmm. Lots of cool shows coming up for him right now.
Check out John's latest books on Amazon. Just search for his name. 40,000 books, John's
written. It's crazy. Yeah, I keep adding.
He's amazing.
Yeah. Do you know, I'm using John C. Driver now on my latest thing because there's another John Driver who writes. So,
You got to do what you got to do. That's why God gave us middle names.
But I own johndriver.com and johncdriver.com.
That guy has a headache.
It's because of that. Mm. And I'm not giving him up.
His website is definitely johnwritesbooks.com.
He's actually way smarter than me. So shout out to the other John. But hey, guys, we also want to take a second and thank our team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on this podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you will find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network that got shows about prayer and Bible study, parenting, all kinds of cool stuff. So check them out at lifeaudio.com. We're grateful to be a part of their team. So, hey, thank you so much for this special episode of the podcast, and we'll bring you another one next week on Talk About That.
Everyone wants to change the world. Capital Ministries is doing just that, one heart at a time, by creating disciples of Jesus Christ among political leaders in the U.S. and foreign nations. For more than 25 years, founder Ralph Drollinger has written Bible studies specifically for public servants. Study along with us and learn what the Bible says about capitalism, communism, abortion, same-sex marriage, and other contemporary issues. Subscribe and follow us at lifeaudio.com or search Capital Ministries on your favorite podcast platform.